This message is brought to you by Atomic Child. Do you love the outdoors? Do you wish you had a way to keep it with you throughout your week? Atomic Child is an artist-run brand that is inspired by nature. They capture the great outdoors through unique designs, and their designs can be found on stickers, blankets, water bottles, mugs, pins, patches, and more at atomicchild.com. Need nature-based art in your life? Look no further. Atomic Child has the gear for you because they bring nature to you. Me, personally, I'm eyeing a new coffee mug or hat with a sweet Colorado design on it. You can bet I'll be ordering some sweet nature-based clothing and accessories right here from Atomic Child. Check out their store and art prints at atomicchild.com. That's atomicchild.com.
To make sure the quality is always the same and we can scale reliably, even when changing a lot of code. So we developed these quality test suites. We run it basically all the time to make sure whatever we do, we scale and we continue to scale. And yeah, we have engineers who are doing, yeah, to even hit at one point of time, we want to hit the 100 million devices mark, which is an order of magnitude larger than most products can do right now. And this is the journey we're on. So it's really about iterating and getting better at scaling every time. My name is Dominik Obermeier. I'm the CTO and co-founder of HiveMQ.
This is Code Story, a podcast bringing you interviews with tech visionaries who share in the critical moments of what it takes to change an industry and build and lead a team that has your back. I'm your host, Noah Labhart, and today how Dominik Obermeier set out to build the broker for IoT data from millions of connected devices. All this and more on Code Story. Growing up in a small rural city in Germany, Dominik Obermeier was not exposed to much when it comes to computers. After studying computer science in college, he was hooked. A frequent reader of ancient philosophy, he likes to hang out with friends and play board games, specifically long-lasting games such as Arkham Horror. Obermeier started a company with his college friends with the goal to broker data from connected devices, and not just a few, but millions, following his very own standardized IoT protocol, MQTT. This solution is now known as HiveMQ.
So we started the company in 2012. And when we started, we didn't have the product in mind, actually. And in 2014, we did a pivot. Because what happened is we were involved in some projects with connecting trains to the internet. And then we found out that the technology which were used to build this Internet of Things solutions back then were really technologies designed for the human internet. So a lot of communication was done over HTTP, which is perfectly fine if you're doing, let's say, browsers or having REST APIs. But if you're doing IoT at scale, it's just not the right technology. And I was fortunate enough to meet the inventor of a communication protocol called MQTT. He basically told me about the protocol and what it's all about. And then we decided to build the first commercial broker built for the cloud based on this protocol. In 2013 and up to 2014. The MVP took 3 months. It was not a finished product. It was really an MVP to test out if there's a need in the market for this kind of commercial MQTT connectivity broker. And yeah, it turned out developers loved it, people loved it. And yeah, so we decided to change our company based on this product. And yeah, this is where we are right now. It's based on the MQ. In HiveMQ is based on the MQTT protocol. And it was a decision also to name it similar to already existing products, to these message queuing systems, to make it easier also for people to figure out what kind of software category this is. Because back then when we started, there weren't a lot of MQTT brokers out there. And these kind of technology pieces, these MQTT brokers, are fundamentally different from classic message queues people are used since the 1980s. mostly about scale and how the protocol works. Because if you think about the Internet of Things, usually we're talking about tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, or even millions of devices which need to communicate in real time over the internet together. And this at lowest latency. The classic messaging systems are not designed for this kind of scale. So while these provide a lot of support, feature support like transactions, and are super good for mission critical or even business critical data to send around systems, these classic MQ systems are really not designed for a huge amount of devices. And MQTT brokers are usually designed for a lot of devices, for sending a lot of data, but they come with some trade-offs. And so just as an example, so our customers use our product to connect more than 10 million devices at the same time and send hundreds of thousands or millions of messages around per second. So this is really about scale, and you just cannot do this with the classic messaging systems. But the semantics are pretty similar, so you can do messaging with MQTT, but the features differ a bit. MQTT is really an Internet of Things protocol, and you usually use this for IoT use cases, while the classic message queuing protocols are used for inter-service communication.
That makes a ton of sense. So back to the MVP a bit. You built the MVP, it took 3 months, it was something to sort of prove a concept. What decisions and trade-offs did you have to make in the short term when you were building that MVP, and how did you cope with those decisions?
So the decisions we made were basically about the target profile, about the personas we were targeting. So since back then, everybody was an engineer in our company when we founded the company. And the idea was really to have a product for MQTT. People who work on the operation side can really easily deploy and easily use. So we did not focus on any graphical user interface. So we really decided to have this as a server application. And also in the beginning, we didn't focus on scale. So the initial MVP supported tens of thousands of connections for MQTT, which we knew were not enough for real use cases. But back then, this was really just to prove a point and to see if there is even interest in larger scale. And this was one of the things we decided pretty early on. We focus about the simplicity, the ease of use, and the target persona was really an operator person who operates the software basically all day and is responsible for having a software with a lot of uptime. If you think about it, an MQTT broker is a central piece of communication software. And if this piece of software fails, you get a huge problem. So we thought it would be important to have an easy product to use, and also a product which provides high availability, but we did not focus on scalability in the first iterations. This changed dramatically as soon as we got the first customers who were very interested in scalability.
That makes sense. Interesting. So how has the product progressed since that point? So you built the MVP 3 months, proved that it worked. How did you progress the product after that? How did you mature it?
Yeah. So one of the things we learned pretty early on was that this kind of new software, this kind of MQTT software, really is used by large companies. So pretty early on, we got car manufacturers reaching out to us and tell us they needed an MQTT broker which can be used with their enterprise environments. And after the MVP, we developed an extension system which made it possible to integrate with existing infrastructure our customers already had. So to provide full flexibility. And this was something we learned pretty early on, how important it is to run the software on-premise for our customers, and also how important it is to give the customer the flexibility to modify code by using an extension system. And so this was one of the things we focused on in the early iterations. And then we decided to focus on scalability, and we worked very hard to build a distributed system which you can install in data centers, you can install on any public cloud platform, and which scales elastically. So you can, so if you have an IoT project which starts with a few thousand of devices you need to connect, then your business basically works, and then you have hundreds of thousands or even millions of these physical devices you sell to your customers. then of course you need the backend broker, which also scales with your demand. And so we built in further iterations this elastic scalability, so you can add infrastructure as needed, remove infrastructure as needed, without any downtime and without the end user who is using this physical device without noticing that you change anything on the backend side. So this was pretty huge, and this was something our competition could not do, and also one of the USPs still today, that we can scale to numbers which are beyond tens of millions of devices. And we had further iterations, and now there is also, we are offering a managed service. So this is like operated by us completely in the cloud, and this is the newest iteration. So our software is not only an on-premise solution anymore, but we operate this for customers. And this is something we saw really change in the last few years. And based on customer feedback, we iterated here.
This episode is sponsored by SaveTheChildren.org. Save the Children believes every child deserves a future. In the United States and around the world, they work every day to give children a healthy start in life, the opportunity to learn, and protection from harm. They deliver lasting results for millions of children, including those hardest to reach, and do whatever it takes for children. Every day. Right now, the coronavirus is the biggest global health crisis of our lifetime. It threatens children in every way. COVID-19 has already left many children without caregivers, out of school, and exposed to violence and exploitation. With your support, SaveTheChildren.org can help children in unsafe households and help support distance learning in the face of school closures. Here are some of the ways your support can make a difference. For just $5, you can buy a baby's first book, providing comfort and inspiring a lifelong love of learning. For $10, you can nourish an out-of-school child in need for one-day breakfast, lunch, and dinner. For $35, you can provide educational toys and activities to engage eager out-of-school learners. And for $50, you can deliver essentials that keep kids learning while out of school, like books, activities, and supplies. Go to SaveTheChildren.org/SaveKids. today, or www.SaveTheChildren.org/SaveKids to make a difference. This message is brought to you by RIMS, the Risk Management Society. RIMS is a global organization dedicated to the profession of risk management. For nearly 60 years, RIMS has delivered the latest strategies and resources that allow risk professionals to grow, innovate, and succeed in any business. RIMS works with industry leaders to produce content and online training that business professionals turn to. Topics include business continuity, cyber risk, risk management techniques, the fundamentals of insurance, and more. There is also a private, members-only site where people can discuss sensitive issues and get honest answers. Members have been leaning on each other as we all navigate the global pandemic. If you're concerned about the safety of your employees and the sustainability of your organization, you need the resources and connections RIMS provides. Learn more at go.rims.org/codestory. You can save 25% off a year-long membership. Again, that's go.rims.org/codestory. So are you saying that you can do on-prem and cloud solutions? You can do both, or is it still on-prem?
Yes, it's both. So the software started as an on-premise solution, so our customers were using the software in their own data centers. But pretty early on, they also ran our software on public cloud infrastructure, like on AWS, on Microsoft, or on Google. And yeah, but nowadays we even operate the software for our customers. So our customers don't need to install anything on their own infrastructure, but we run it. We run it on all major cloud providers. So yeah, our customers can benefit from just using the software instead of operating it themselves.
Now, that's really interesting. So are they, when they use it on cloud infrastructure and you're running it for them, do they have a piece of an instance, or do they have their own dedicated instance of Hive?
Yeah, so we provide our own dedicated instance of Hive. So also basically we run it in multiple data centers. So if you're on AWS, we run it in multiple availability zones for our customers. We also operate the load balancers. We also make sure the security part is done right. So we also care about the TLS certificates. And so we also operate it 24/7. So in case anything bad happens, our engineers are always there to fix it. So usually the customer doesn't even notice if there is a problem. Yeah, it just works for our customers.
How do you go about building the roadmap now? You know, I get early days, you build it, you make it work, and you prove that it works, and then you start maturing that core product. But how do you today build your roadmap? What's the best thing to build next?
This is a very important question, and this is also for our engineering and product team, it's the most important questions we have. And I see different parts which should we focus on here. So number one is the vision of the technology vision. And this is really something, my job is at the company, and I'm fortunate enough to have a lot of awesome people who also contribute here to the vision. So what are the things which are not yet on the market and customers don't even know they will need? So these are really the huge things. Where can we innovate? This is number one we need to consider. Number two, and this is one of the most important parts, is the customer feedback. We have very close relationships with our customers and we listen very closely what they need, and be it some minor feature requests or even some huge problems they see when, let's say, integrating the software with other providers or additional business tasks they have, and we figure out how we can help them with our software. And the thing, how we bring this together is, and this is our system around this, is we use Kanban. So even from the beginning, we started with a Kanban approach where we can prioritize in a very short term. So in our company, at the core, we are an agile company, and not just on the technology side, but also on the business side. So it's really our goal to be very agile, and agile means for us, we have very short feedback cycles, which means we can react on things that happen, be it like on a technical side. So perhaps there are some issues, some bugs, perhaps there are some feature requests of important customers. Perhaps there are some obstacles to winning a new customer who needs some features or has some requirements we don't fulfill at the moment. So these are the things we all need to consider. And so we use Kanban for short feedback cycles, and we reprioritize on a weekly basis with our development team. And in case of any very urgent things, we can even reprioritize on a daily basis, which makes it super awesome. Our developers ship code on a daily basis, sometimes on an hourly basis. And we have a completely automated quality assurance process in addition to the manual quality assurance process, which allows us to move at a very fast pace and ship features very, very fast, and then also deliver to our customers very fast. And this is really the Kanban process at heart we use, and it worked extremely well for us. Compared with some other companies or some other CTOs I have good relationships with, most people use Scrum, but for our company, it turned out that Kanban works extremely well.
Very good. So, it's interesting with agile companies too, it is important to have your processes right, but it's just as important to have the right people running those processes, which kind of leads to my next question. How did you go about building your team to align with product development? And even further, what did you look for in the people to pick the winning horses?
I'm a strong believer in building a team of the best people. So before I start, what I do care about people, what I don't care about is age. And it's anything related to the gender, sexuality, or whatever. So this is something we don't care at all. And because what we really want is we want to have the best people. And especially age is, from my point of view, overrated factor. So we really like to interview people right from university or people who just have a few years of experience. Because experience is something you can learn. But the characteristics of the people, like the character, and much more important from my point of view. And what do you mean with character? So we have a strong focus on technical people here in our company. Most of the people in our company have a technical background, even in roles like marketing and sales. A technical background is usually needed for understanding and market and sell the product to our customers, who are usually also very technical from the scope. So we work from people straight from university. We work with senior people. We hire usually from other companies or from people who also move to our city where we live. And we also really strive to be in, so we live in a very small city. So the good thing here is we just have 80,000 people living in our area. And we are positioned by far as one of the best technology companies there, which makes it easy to attract people, to attract software engineers, to attract product managers, to attract project managers, consultants, salespeople, and folks from marketing. So this works pretty well for us. So we're outside of the big cities, which is a different strategy than other companies I know of. But for us, it works extremely well. And also, when we look at where people are coming from, we have people here in our city, but we also have people who work from the other side of the globe. So we're in Germany, but we also have people in Canada. So at heart, we're a remote team. But for product development, I really like to have people co-located because I found that this accelerates product development and product design.
It's really interesting about the co-location. I totally agree with that. You can start to read each other's cues and you can sort of feel the warmth of each other's thoughts, so to speak. And it's really important. You know, you mentioned earlier you kind of started without scaling in mind. Let's touch on that a little bit. How did you address scalability as you went about? Talk to me more about that journey and how you are building the product with a scalable eye to the future.
So in the first versions of Hive and Q, we found that clustering is one of the most important parts of our software to really scale, also scale dynamically. So in the beginning, we used third-party clustering technologies, which were already there. And then we found that this limits our software and we just cannot scale beyond a specific threshold, which is usually about, let's say, 50 to 100,000 of devices. And what we did then is we basically rewrote the core of our software and we did a lot of research, which we still continue to do today, which means our software is a distributed software. All the problems of distributed computing apply to the things we do. And so the job of our software engineers, besides coding, is to educate themselves a lot by reading papers. So we usually read up about algorithms. And we also work very closely with universities in distributed systems research to find out what are better ways to scale, how can we solve specific problems which you run into when doing things at scale. And at some point of time, just for example, so as we iterated the product and we got better and better and connected millions of devices, we found out the limiting factor is in fact the network of the cloud providers. So we saturated the networks of the cloud providers. And so we really did a lot of optimizations. We built tooling around this. So we even built a whole software stack based on software, which allows us to simulate tens of millions of devices on real infrastructure. So we can make sure we hit our scalability goals. And now we have, for example, a very sophisticated device simulator developed in-house where we can simulate any IoT scenario, any MQTT protocol scenario we can think of. And we can just use this. And this is also advantage we have over the competition, because we found scale is so important for our customers that we need to be good. And when you do things at scale, when just think about when you do connect millions of devices on the same software, on the same servers, you run in a whole lot of problems, like things break all the time. And the tiniest change in code, which may just seem very little, can have catastrophic. So small errors in code can cause catastrophic problems for our customers. So it's very important for us to make sure the quality is always the same and we can scale reliably even when changing a lot of code. So we developed these quality test suites. We run it basically all the time to make sure whatever we do, we scale and we continue to scale. And yeah, we have engineers who are doing to even hit at one point of time, we want to hit the 100 million devices mark, which is an order of magnitude larger than most products can do right now. And this is the journey we're on. So it's really about iterating and getting better at scaling every time.
Now, that's fascinating. So you built the solution to set yourself up for success when testing all the changes you've made. You're essentially load testing your platform with the number of devices to make sure I think that's really, really smart. I think the thing that jumped out at me that I hadn't heard before was the limitation being the pipe in the cloud, was the network in the cloud providers. That's really interesting.
Yes, and these are the things we got better at this, and now we still, our software still saturates the network, or can saturate the network, but usually most of our customers aren't there to have this large scale, but our software can scale this far. And this is also why we build our own cloud. And this is also why we have a multi-cloud approach. So we can use the best cloud provider for the job, because we found that all of them have their limitations. And we developed the tools to find out the limitations and to make the best product for our customers who really care about scale.
Right. That's awesome. You know, as you step out onto the balcony and you look across Hive and all that you have built, what are you most proud of?
So there are multiple things I am very proud of. One of the things which my whole team is extremely proud of is that last year we won the sixth place at the Deloitte Fast 50 Award in Germany, because we had a 1,200% revenue growth over the last 4 years. So we really took off, the product really took off, our customer base also took off, and we had so many amazing customers using our software. And and other things I'm very proud of. So if I look out of the window here in Germany, I see a lot of cars driving around. And what makes me and my team very proud of is that most of these cars on the street already use HiveMQ for their device connectivity. So basically, wherever we are here in Germany, we see the impact of what our software has on the day-to-day life of people. And this is what we're very proud of. And the third thing I'm also very proud of is that despite the fact that we are a very fast-growing company, we are a bootstrapped company. So we started with an MVP, and then we try to get as many customers as possible in a very short time to get the sustainable cash flow in. And we managed to grow our company by serving our customers and by winning new customers and selling our product to the market. And this is also something that makes me proud of.
That's awesome. I love it. You look out the window and you say, that car right there is using HiveMQ, or that car right there is using HiveMQ. That's something to be really proud of. You can see the difference you made. Let me flip the script a little bit. Tell me about a mistake you made and how your team responded to it.
So one of the mistakes I made personally was when we grew our engineering team, we knew we had to rewrite major parts of the software for a new major version. And we were very tight on time. And as usually, when you have these ambitious projects, things didn't turn out as we expected. And then I decided to code again. So nowadays I don't do any coding at all, but back then I did quite some coding, and I jumped in and wanted to be with my developers and also help building the software. I was a pretty good programmer, but I got rusty, and this caused major quality problems. And in the end, this even almost caused a delay in our product. And so this was where we finally learned that it's not the best idea that the CTO goes into the product team and helps developing software. Because the processes and also the Kanban process I was talking about, it evolved and yeah, and so basically I worked out of the process, and then this was not a very good time for the team. And what the team did, and this was the right decision, the team then stepped up and we decided it's not the best idea that I continue coding. And so my team was finally able to ship without me. And this was the last time where I was coding in our company, and it's absolutely right. So I like coding. So in my free time, I like coding, but in my company, I have other tasks, and I have people working in my company who are, of course, much better than me in coding.
I appreciate your humility in that. I have been in that position before, and I've learned that same lesson that I shouldn't jump in and help. So yeah, I relate to that lesson. So tell me about the future of HiveMQ. What does the future look like for your product or other products and your team?
now in 2020, one thing that is pretty clear is that the Internet of Things is not just a buzzword anymore. It is the reality in a lot of projects. And I strongly believe in the next years, even if we don't talk about IoT anymore, the connectivity, which connects physical products, physical devices, and software together, will be part of the daily life of many companies. And for us, we see the future in cloud computing. And this might not be surprising to a lot of people, but when you look at the large Internet of Things deployment you find nowadays, these are usually operated by companies on-premise. So while startups and mid-sized companies use the cloud a lot, and even enterprises nowadays, we found in our customer base that because of data privacy reasons, a lot of these large enterprises operate their own systems. And what we did now with HiveMQ Cloud, our software as a service offering, we are changing the game by providing a multi-cloud connectivity layer the customer doesn't need to operate, but which allows to integrate with third-party services, with third-party device management services, with third-party data lakes, with big data, artificial intelligence solutions. And so we really now have this multi-cloud native IoT messaging layer that our customers can just use without operating it themselves. And we see a lot of customers urge us to this, and we completely see the future, our future, in this kind of infrastructure. And we also strongly believe that an ecosystem of vendors is needed. So we are living in times where big cloud providers like AWS almost create monopolies on specific software stacks. And what we see is the appetite for customers for using third-party services, the best-in-class third-party services, who just work together. And this is something we're actively working on. We have a large partner network, which we continue to develop, because nowadays it's a software stack consists of so many different pieces, it's very, very hard for companies to manage this anymore. And so it's extremely important that things just work, that you can just integrate services together. And this is also where we see ourselves. We see as part of an ecosystem, and we play very nicely together with all the major cloud providers and many popular third-party services, which are required for building these large-scale Internet of Things stacks.
That's good stuff. Who influences the way that you work, Dominic? Name an architect or a CTO or a person you look up to and tell me why.
There are many people I look up to. I don't have a specific person in tech I look up to, but I really look up to a lot of these big personalities, these big characters in our history. I really look up to a lot of the ancient philosophers. I really look up to many of these larger-than-life figures. Also, we have nowadays, so just to name a few of them, someone like Bill Gates, who managed to create one of the best software companies in the world, one of the largest companies in the world, and then pivoted his own life to give back and go into philanthropy and just give back with the foundation he built. And this is something really bold, and I look up to these people, how brave these people are and what these people achieved. But these personalities don't necessarily need to be in tech. Of course, nowadays, a lot of these very larger-than-life figures are working in tech. But I usually also try to look back in history and get inspiration of people from the last decades and centuries. And there are so many people we can learn from. And yeah, but I don't have a specific...
That's a great answer. So if you could go back to the beginning when you started HiveMQ, what would you consider doing differently?
So first of all, I am very grateful to have experienced all these good times and sometimes these very hard times in the past. So I'm very happy that I am now in the place I am. If I would have the knowledge I have nowadays, I would probably start beginning focusing on the business side a bit more. So we started as a pure engineering company with no business person involved at all. So everybody, all of our founders were We are computer science students. So, and then we learned the hard way how business works. And this is something I would probably get a co-founder on board who has a bit of more business background, but also understands the technology aspect of business. So this is something I probably would do differently, but I'm very happy where we stand right now.
That makes sense. That's a good answer.
So you're getting on a plane. You're sitting next to a person who's built the next big thing, whatever it is, and they are just excited to show it to you, excited to tell you about their project. Having gone down this road a bit and seen some success with Hive, what advice will you give that person?
An advice I also usually give to startups I personally mentor is the best way to validate product market fit is actual customers paying you money for it. I would strongly recommend to anyone building products to build an MVP, which should be very embarrassing, and then try out hypotheses. So I would also recommend to read this Lean Startup by Eric Ries, which was really influential for us and for our philosophy around building products, because it's really about getting feedback, getting customers, getting the customers' feedback, and iterating on a better product version. So yeah, my advice would be get feedback, sell it, get customers as early as possible, and then iterate from there. And if you can, bootstrap, because then you can completely focus on building product instead of raising money. Yeah, which makes life a bit harder in the beginning, but makes life much easier as soon as you found product market fit and have customers paying you money for your product.
That's great advice. Well, Dominic, thank you for being on the show today. Thank you for being on Code Story and telling the creation story of Hive MQ.
Okay, thanks, Noah.
And this concludes another chapter of Code Story.
Code Story is hosted and produced by Noah Labhart. Season 2 episodes are co-produced and edited by Bradley Denham. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcasting app of your choice. Support the show on patreon.com/codestory for just $5 to $10 a month. And when you get a chance, leave us a review. Both things help us out tremendously. And thanks again for listening.
A quick note from our friends at DrawSQL. As a developer, have you ever wanted to visualize your database schema? DrawSQL helps you create pretty database diagrams to document your database and share it within your dev team. In fact, they just launched a gallery that was featured on Product Time and ranked number 3 on Hacker News. So definitely check it out to see some database schema references of popular open source packages. Get a 20% lifetime discount on any DrawSQL plans by using CodeStory, all caps, all one word, at checkout, or just email hello@drawsql.app.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.